Alejandra. And thanks to everyone for the music and just the beautiful setting that you've created in a virtual space. I really do feel like we're together. Well, as you can probably tell, I enjoy old fairy tales and I think about them often. I hope that you do too. They're an important part of our common heritage, packed tight with treasure, like the chests in a troll's cave or a witch's cottage. You can go back to them time and again and always find new things to think about and new ways to think about them. Here's Joan Lindberg's poem, The Disputed History of Hansel and Gretel, from her collection, Paraphernalia. And so the pair grew taller. The trees cast ever longer shadows. Youths shouted after them as they went about their work. Oi, Hansel, show us your grandmother. Hey, Gretel, give us a pearl. They kept their heads down and never answered back. The village became a town. Deep inside the forest, axes split trunks and skulls, and now they had kids of their own. Hansel would always insist that his kids only tell them nice things when he came home from school. Be happy, he said. You're lucky, luckier than you realize. Gretel wrapped hers up layer upon layer till their faces disappeared, halfway into spring. Stay close, she said. Stay close. It's dark, darker than you could know. Darker than you could know. Darker than you could know. I can't think of a better poem or story to hear right after Halloween. No, let's hear some spooky music or whatever else you might have, Deborah. Thank you. Well, do you remember the first time that you went trick-or-treating? Take a moment. That's probably a big memory for some of us. Do you remember your first costume? What was it? Did you go out alone? Or did a parent go with you? Mom? Dad? An older brother or sister? When you became parents, those who have, did you take your own kids out or let them go alone? I think it takes a lot of courage for kids to go up to that first door and ring the bell or knock to any door, really, especially if they've heard the story of Hansel and Gretel. It takes a lot of trust with a strange house, candy, older and much bigger people, and darkness all around. When that door opens, who knows what might happen? We come into the world awfully helpless, and our memory of that never really goes away. Lots of things remind us of that feeling. Stories, nursery rhymes, TV shows, or movies. Of all the movies that my parents never should have taken me to see, The Time Machine was the worst. It came out in the summer of 1960 when I wasn't quite 7 and my sister not quite 8. We were both scared, but she got over it quickly. After all, her bedroom was right next to our parents. I had to sleep in a room built over the garage on the other side of a deep, dark stairwell that took a turn and ended right by the door to the even deeper, darker stairs that led to the basement. The Time Machine was based on H.G. Wells' 1985 novella by the same name, in which he introduced the modern idea of time travel. A wealthy London gentleman, who's also a dilettante scientist, builds a machine in his home laboratory and uses it to transport himself to the same spot more than 800,000 years in the future. Where his British home had stood, he finds a lush, semi-tropical landscape and a very different social scene. the human family has become divided into just two groups. He first meets the Eloi, who live in pleasant group homes like garden structures open to the mild air with no doors or windows. They appear to do no work at all. The Eloi are youthful, cute, rather small. In the movie, they're all blondes with pageboy haircuts. None seem older than 23, 24. They lounge a lot. When they aren't lounging, they play various sorts of games, though they're not at all athletic. They have no books and no real motivation. Their food is all fruit, some of it starchy, but all of it sweet, easy to eat. They have no electric lights, but when it's dark, it's darker than you could know. The dark is where the Morlocks live, the other side of humanity, underground on the other side of things. It's the Morlocks who provide the Eloi's food. They retain some sort of technology and industry that produces clothing for the surface dwellers and the buildings where they dwell. The time traveler can hear the sounds of the Morlocks' machines thrumming everywhere beneath the gardens and pavilions of the surface where the Eloi pass their time, as if unaware of their neighbors. H.G. Wells described the Morlocks as pale, covered with long white hair. The movie added blue skin and eyes that glowed red in the dark. Either way you picture them, compared to the Eloi, they look unmistakably old. Old. They can't stand fire or daylight, but come up at night from the basement of the world, bringing things that the Eloi might require. They return underground before dawn, carrying what they need from the surface. They also steal the time machine. So the time traveler climbs down a ventilation shaft to look for it. In a dark corridor, he finds some meat on a metal table and wonders. He's seen no trace of any large animals in the upper world, and this is a big piece of meat. Then he realizes what kind of meat it must be. Do you? In exchange for being housed, clothed, and fed, the Eloi must agree to eventually be eaten. That's why none are older than 20-something. A sophisticated author like H.G. Wells was reflecting on British class society and a host of issues, of course. But what my child's eyes saw was this: the old feeding on the young. What my child's ears heard was the sound of the furnace or the washing machine or the sump pump down in the basement of our house, thrumming just like the Morlocks machines in the movie. What if they were down there? Would they come upstairs to get me? They couldn't be real, but what if they were? The best plan was probably to never go to sleep again, at least not in my own bed. I would slip in as quietly as I could next to my big sister, uncertain if our hungry, unhappy parents could be trusted. Morlock, was there some connection? The old feeding on the young. It's one of our most ancient fears. Think about it. We enter a world where everyone is bigger than us and exponentially stronger. They do so many things that we can't. How they make or manage what they do is beyond our comprehension. So much of it seems to happen, if not in real darkness, then at least where we can't see. Stuff appears as if by magic, then disappears without a trace. Maybe I'll be next. With luck, they'll choose my sister since she's bigger, but then I'll be alone when they come back for me. It's easy to turn all of this around, of course. Hansel and Gretel don't eat the witch, but they are the ones who cook her. And do you remember how the tale begins? The stepmother is worried that feeding the children will cause the adults to starve. She's their stepmother, so she never nursed them. But it's easy to share her concern about the young feeding on the old. If we live long enough, a time comes when most of us become infirm. We need help doing many things we used to do ourselves. Now we may need help with clothing, shelter, and also with our food. What's to prevent younger folks from taking our money or our homes and leaving us to starve? The old feeding on the young feeding on the old, certain voices feed both fears, especially in election years. To the young, they say, look at those old geezers taking it easy while you slave away in a world they've drained of riches. Why should you take care of them? They should be willing to sacrifice themselves to the coronavirus to help get your economy back on track. Take your payroll tax cut now, and heck with Social Security for all those wrinkly parasites. To older folks, they say, you've worked hard all your life to build your pretty home, and now these lazy kids, many of them here illegally, are nibbling at the corners, gobbling up what they never helped to make. Remember the poem we started with today. Maybe they'll bump you off for your pearls. The story of Hansel and Gretel tells us that such fears and tensions between young and old are nothing new. At the time of the Prophet Muhammad, female infanticide was common in Arabia. Some family member would take an unwanted newborn girl somewhere out of town, dig a little hole, cover her with a little soil, and then leave. The problem was solved, and you hadn't technically committed a murder since you'd left the child alive, like the stepmother did when she left Hansel and Gretel in the woods. You can find different variations around the world at any point in time of this practice. Muhammad had been a caravan trader who often camped in the wild. Perhaps he'd come across the remains of such children, maybe more than once. So when someone asked him, one, what's the worst possible thing that a human being can do? And two, after that, what's the next worst thing? He answered, not surprisingly, that the worst thing was idolatry or polytheism. But right after that came killing your children, quote, for fear they might join you in food. The first is a crime against divinity. The second violates our humanity. Periods of scarcity have been a fact of human life since the beginning, just as they were for our pre-human ancestors and all other living creatures. Those might kill their offspring when food is scarce, or even use their young for food. But if we do the same, we won't be truly human. Our humanity is defined by certain lines of trust. What do you make of the humanity of the witch in our fairy tale? How about the stepmother? How about the woodcutter, the children's father? He's a piece of work, isn't he? Not much of a spine for a guy who works with an axe. The version of Hansel and Gretel that I shared with the children earlier is very close to what you would find in the classic collection of Grimm's fairy tales. But there's an important difference that I'd like to share with you now. It comes in the scene after the children have defeated the witch and filled their pockets with her jewels and gold, but now find they have to cross a large body of water, in order to get home. In the version I read to the kids, a duck appears to ferry them across and they both hop on her back. But Grimm's version tells us, the children's version, both kids gets on, right? They get on. Grimm's version tells us that the good-natured duck came up near the bank, so close indeed that Hansel could seat himself and wanted to take his little sister on his lap. But she said, no, we'll be too heavy for the kind duck. Let her take us over one at a time. The good creature did as the children wished. She carried Gretel over first and then came back for Hansel. You would think that after facing such terrors as being abandoned and lost and captivity in the house of the child-eating witch, these kids would cling to each other with grim determination. Instead, they are willing and able to trust yet another stranger, to trust each other, and to trust that things will now work out. Hansel is comfortable enough to stand for a while alone and not quite out of the woods yet. It's a bit like the first time you go up all by yourself on Halloween to ring a stranger's doorbell with no one by your side. That's an important moment. I think that of all the brave things these kids have done, this is one of the bravest. Soon they will get home to their father. They're tough little things, but they still need care. They will need to trust him again in all his flawed humanity, and they're ready to do so. And that may be the bravest thing of all. It's the real triumph, much greater than their triumph over the witch. The story has also killed off the stepmother, so we trust that the kids will be safe in the future, though the story doesn't take us there. We have to trust. But I think that future looks brighter than it does in the poem that I shared imagines it to be. I look forward to Halloween coming again as usual next year. Though partisan campaigns may work to divide us, this funny little autumn holiday does a lot to bring us together. It takes trust to go up to a doorstep that's festooned with bats and spiders and skeletons, and to take candy from stranger after stranger. It's just the opposite of what you'd do on a normal day, let alone after dark. It takes a lot of trust for kids to do it. It takes a lot for adults to let them. And in spite of what we may be hearing to the contrary from some of our leaders, a lot more trust is exactly what we need. So may it be.